Hello, and welcome to Fortune's Wheelhouse, a podcast about esoterics and the tarot. I'm Susie Chang, and my co-host is Mel Moline. The podcast ended its run in 2021, but all Fortune's Wheelhouse episodes remain available for all tarot explorers to enjoy. And we'll be periodically updating the intro and the outro with news and offerings from your co-hosts. The big news for me right now is that my latest book, The Living Tarot, is now out. This is the book version of my online class, which is also called The Living Tarot. Whether you go for the book or the class or both, the idea here is to help you recognize how the images in the cards relate to your everyday, ordinary life. As you master that language of fluent metaphor, you'll enter into a deep, rich conversation with the world of symbol. And that conversation, I personally believe, is the key to re-enchanting your own life. If you're new to tarot, this is the book that will get you up and running. And if you're an experienced reader already, it's meant to help fill in any remaining gaps that you might or might not realize that you have. And if you buy the book, you can send me a copy of the receipt for a $22 discount off the cost of the online Living Tarot class. If you're in the online class, you get a monthly Zoom meeting with me and other students, feedback from me on the major assignments, and, if you graduate, a one-question reading from me. Oh my God, guys, it's such a good deal. If you'd like to send me your receipt, you can do that at tsusanchang.com/livingtarotbook. tsusanchang.com/livingtarotbook. Now, here's what Mel's been up to. She's just rebuilt her tarotcart.com website, which has a new info page about Thoth-inspired decks and a blog feature with weekly tarot articles. She also has a new auction site for one-of-a-kind creations, out-of-print items, prints, and original art, and that's at tarotcart.auction. Mel's first deck, the Rosetta Tarot, is back in a new large edition. It's the same size as the large edition of the Tabula Mundi Tarot, if you're familiar with that, and it has vibrant borders with English titles and correspondence symbols, and the card backs are printed with metallic ink. That's available at tarotcart.com. Mel will also soon be launching a new, ceremonially rendered, talismanic tarot. The major arcana are based on their descriptions in Aleister Crowley's 777, and the minors are based on the magical images of the decans, also from 777. I don't know about you, but I'm very excited about Mel's new deck. For info about when the new tarot deck launches, and auction listings, and new tarot editions, and article links, and special sales, you can sign up for Mel's newsletter via the link at tarotcart.com. As for me, I've also just created a new thing I'd like to tell you about. You know the Nine of Swords in Rider-Waite-Smith? If you're like me, you may have noticed the beautiful blanket on the bed of the person having a nervous breakdown in that card. All my life, I've wanted that blanket, and recently, I created my own. It's got red roses, hand-drawn by me, and zodiacal glyphs on a blue patchwork background, and I made it while Mars was in the second decan of Gemini. If you're listening to this podcast, you'll know why that's important. You can purchase your very own Nine of Swords blanket at redbubble.com/people/tarotista/shop. If you love Fortune's Wheelhouse, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Your monthly donations allow us to keep these episodes on the air for our many repeat listeners. And you also gain access to the archive of hundreds of posts and articles that we wrote for our original Patreon supporters. You can sign up for a one-time or recurring donation at www.patreon.com/fortuneswheelhouse, thereby cementing your legacy as a superhero of the astral realm and earning our undying gratitude. Once again, that's patreon.com/fortuneswheelhouse. And now, here's this week's episode. Hello, and welcome to Fortune's Wheelhouse, a podcast about esoterics and the tarot. I'm Susie Chang, and my co-host is Mel Moline. The podcast ended its run in 2021, but all Fortune's Wheelhouse episodes remain available for all tarot explorers to enjoy. and we'll be periodically updating the intro and the outro with news and offerings from your co-hosts. It's spring 2024 right now, and I've got a couple new updates to share with you. The first thing is that my next live event will be in Minneapolis, Minnesota, from May 17th to May 19th. I will be keynoting at the North Star Tarot Conference. North Star is a wonderful, creative gathering of tarot enthusiasts of every level, and I am super excited to go there, especially since I rarely get to attend conferences in the Midwest. If you're in the area or able to get yourself there, I would love to meet some of our Fortune's Wheelhouse listeners in person. For more information, just Google North Star Tarot and 2024, and you'll see the Eventbrite link where you can sign up. The second thing is that I have a new little project that's just come out. It's called Dreaming the Deccans, and it's a collection of 36 spells and images that I produced over my last 2 years of Deccan walking. The spells are based on my archive of daily card draws, and the images are digital collages that reflect my understanding of the Decanic Minors of the Tarot. It's a beautiful, high-quality production, and I'm offering it only on Lulu, the printing website, so as to keep the price affordable. To order your copy, go to lulu.com, that's L-U-L-U.com, and enter Dreaming the Deccans in the search box. That's lulu.com and Dreaming the Deccans. The third and maybe most exciting piece of news I have for you is that my last book, The Living Tarot, is up for a COVER Award. COVER is the Coalition of Visionary Resources. It's an organization that recognizes outstanding new releases, and it helps merchants find them and get them out to the public. If my work has been of value to you in your own tarot journey, I would be so honored if you'd place a vote for The Living Tarot. To do that, you'd go to cover.org, that's C-O-V-R.org, and scroll down to where it says voting is now open for the 2024 COVER Visionary Awards. You can also just Google cover.org and voting link, and you'll get to the same place. Either way, you will land on a page where you vote for the best title in each of several categories. If you're not familiar with anything in a given category, don't worry about it. Just hit none of the above and click on through to the next. It'll take you about 5 minutes in all, and you'll see The Living Tarot when you get to the books category in the tarot section. Now, I know that one online vote doesn't seem like all that much, but guys, I cannot thank you enough for supporting my work by doing this. Tarot Correspondences won one of these a few years back, and it was a huge deal for me. And as we know, every vote matters every time. With your help, we can bring the magic of tarot into the lives of lots more people. And I mean, in times like these, who doesn't need tarot? Voting closes on April 30th, so kindly visit as soon as you have a moment. Fingers crossed. Meanwhile, Mel has been working on an art project for the last 4 years. It's a hand-painted deck based on the magical decans of the zodiac, as described in Crowley's 777. She only has a few cards left to go, and its anticipated release date is coming in mid-2024. I don't know about you, but I am so excited to see Mel's new deck. To find out more and see progress reports, you can visit Mel's blog, which is tabulamundi.com. To be notified when it's available, you can also sign up for Mel's newsletter by going to the sign-up link on the homepage of Mel's web store, which is tarotcart.com. That's also where you'll find Mel's other decks, Tabula Mundi, Rosetta, and Pharos, all of which are currently available. If you love Fortune's Wheelhouse, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Your monthly donations allow us to keep these episodes on the air for our many repeat listeners. And you also gain access to the archive of hundreds of posts and articles that we wrote for our original Patreon supporters. You can sign up for a one-time or recurring donation at www.patreon.com/fortuneswheelhouse, thereby cementing your legacy as a superhero of the astral realm and earning our undying gratitude. Once again, that's patreon.com fortuneswheelhouse. And now, here's this week's episode.
Two steps forward, one step back. Feel my body won't go back, no, no, no.
Okay, hi everybody. We are back and we are going to be talking about the zodiacal sign of Cancer the Crab and its manifestation in all ways in esoteric tarot. Excited to do this. The cards that we will be covering in this episode are the cards of Cancer. So first of all, the zodiacal major of the Chariot, which is associated with Cancer, and then the three decanic minors, the 2, 3, and 4 of Cups, associated with the three decans of Cancer. We will also be talking about the court cards. That means the Queen of Cups for the 2 and 3 of Cups, the first and second decans of Cancer, the third one belonging to the Prince of Wands or Knight of Wands. And then we can also touch upon, besides the major arcanum of the Chariot, we'll also talk about the Hanged Man, which is the elemental major of water. And I guess the ruler of Cancer is being the moon. We can talk about the priestess a little bit as well. Priestess or high priestess. In terms of the technical specs of Cancer, it is a nocturnal or night or yin or feminine in polarity sign. It is of the elemental triplicity of water. It is of the cardinal modality or quadruplicity. This is our second one of those, the first having been Aries. And its ruler, of course, is the moon. There's all kinds of dignity details to talk about as well. The moon is in rulership. Saturn is in detriment in Cancer. And Jupiter is exalted in Cancer. And Mars is in fall in Cancer. I think that covers it. All right. So let's dip a toe into the waters of Cancer, shall we? Our first water sign, all the seas and oceans and rivers of the world are ours to explore. You know, the figure of the crab is such an interesting one. I looked a little bit into the etymology, why Cancer is associated with, you know, the disease of Cancer, which I think is kind of a bummer for those who have their sun in that sign, because, you know, you want to look up your horoscope and you enter in Cancer and you get terrible things. The word was karkinos in Greek. That's just the word for crab.
Kars.
Yeah. And I think the... The etymology that I saw didn't relate so much with the shell, which I thought it would, as with the pincers, the idea that a metastatic tumor in Cancer
caused from carcinogens,
will kind of spread out like the pincers of a crab and kind of look like that a little bit. So
it makes me think of, you know, Carcer the prison, but I think that's a Capricorn thing, which is on the same axis.
Yes, actually. Interestingly enough, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, you'd think. It's interesting also, you know, if you think about that Cancer Capricorn axis with the moon on one end rulership and Saturn in rulership in Capricorn, they are the quickest and the slowest.
Yes. Know.
On each, either end of that chain of being, the most changeable and the least changeable.
Yeah. Well, Saturn too is the, like, the furthest out and the coldest. The moon's interesting because it's, has no light of its own. So it's kind of cold, but it reflects the light of the sun, the warmest.
Yeah. And it speeds through the sky, you know, changing sign faster than any other celestial body. Whereas Saturn is the slowest, if you're not counting the outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. Another interesting thing is the exaltation and fall, the Jupiter being, you know, the planet of growth. And Cancer really has a lot of those growth qualities to it. It's, you know, incredibly fertile sign. Maybe that's why Jupiter does so well there, in a sense. It's also cold and watery, and Mars is in fall. So Mars does not do well in Cancer, being hot and fiery.
Yeah.
So a lot of the themes of Cancer, you know, have to do with its changefulness, have to do with its nurturing and fertility, the mothering aspects of
the other thing that's interesting is Cancer's position on the zodiacal wheel. So, you know, like all the cardinal signs, Aries, the last one we did was on the horizon, the eastern horizon, the beginning, the sunrise, whereas Cancer's at the nadir, midnight, and kind of like the home base, you know?
Yes, yes.
The home base of the zodiacal wheel.
Right, right. And that's definitely something you notice with the Cancer archetype, that home is so important. Home needs to be safe. In fact, it's so safe you just carry it around with you all the time.
You know? There's no place like home.
Yeah, the crab in its shell is ever defended. We'll be talking about the Chariot, but a lot of people wonder why the Chariot is associated with Cancer, which is such a maternal, tender sign, and why is it associated with this warrior figure? But what's more important to defend than the home? Right.
Right. What's more fierce in nature than the mother bear, you know, protecting its cubs?
Exactly. That's
something you don't want to mess with.
Yeah. And I was listening to their observations from Kelly and Chris and Austin on the astrology podcast that, you know, Cancer represents the primordial wellspring, the origin of life, that which must be protected at all costs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting too, because it's cardinal water.
Mm-hmm.
And where is water really most active? It's those deep, deep undercurrents of the ocean. And you know, that's Cancer's reach into the subconscious, those deep undercurrents of feeling. And that is their motto, after all, is I feel.
I feel, exactly. And, you know, that's a really interesting motto in the sense that, like, if you're an underwater creature, you do have a sense of touch that is highly developed. Like all of those vibrations that are transmitted by the water are information for you. You feel everything. Yep. You're sensitive to touch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of that as well. Super sensitive.
It's a real, again, each time we switch a sign, there's like a real contrast between the sign that came before. And here again, you know, we had kind of the superficiality and restlessness and flightiness of Gemini as it goes out into the community and networks. And then in Cancer, it goes back to the home and the family and the tribe. It becomes much more of a, you know, kind of tribal thing.
Yeah, there's the airy detachment versus the watery connectedness, you know, not
attachment.
Being separate at all. Attachment. That's the word I'm looking for.
From detachment to attachment.
Yeah. The pincers, the claws, the having and holding and not letting go.
Yes.
And whereas the sort of direction of the story of Gemini is to sacrifice and give up one half of, you know, to separate from and divide and
Cancer's not giving up nothing.
No, not indeed. No, it's holding on. It's a incredibly tenacious sign.
Yes.
Conservative in the sense of loving the past, loving the things it already has, and protecting them at all cost, while also giving birth to new things. So, you know, there can be a little hoarding.
Oh, yeah, they definitely have hoarding tendencies and accumulation of money. They're definitely mostly very much into saving and accumulating money for security and in food, too, like food hoarding. That's a Cancer thing.
Yeah, we talked a little bit in the Taurus episode about the similarities between Taurus and Cancer in terms of fertility, in terms of in terms of love of possessions, in terms of snacks.
I think with Cancer, there's also the holding on to feelings. Like, they're not necessarily going to share their feelings with you. Sometimes they do, and usually when you don't want them to. But, there's a secretiveness and a taciturn quality where they're, until they really trust you, or if they're hurt, they're not going to say anything.
Right. You will have to read their minds, which is a psychic thing about the crab. You know, the moodiness isn't necessarily personal. It's just that it has to do with picking up on everything, you know, and being sensitive to everything.
Sometimes they do imagine slights where none exist. like there's an oversensitive quality to get hurt over something that didn't even happen.
So one thing I've learned with my daughter being a Cancer is that there's going to be bad moods inevitably, but one thing you can do is just wait it out. You know, it's like the weather in New England. Five minutes later, 10 minutes
right.
later.
The changeability of the moon.
Mm-hmm. Only change is certain.
You know, we're talking about changeability again, and that's a similarity, but also a difference with Gemini, where with Gemini, it's the changeability of thought or the changeability of Mercury, whereas here we have the changeability of the moon, which is more changeability of emotions.
Of mood. Yeah, that makes sense.
I couldn't decide on a snappy one-line thing for Cancer. I had too many, but I think I finally settled on the roots, because they draw from deep wells, deep waters. Yeah. They are, you know, the roots are associated with the home, you know, and genealogies and histories and things like that. It was hard to choose one, but that was the one I came up with.
For sure. I sometimes think of it as the well because, or the wellspring, because, you know, you have the water in there, but you also have the stone protective fence around it, you know?
That's a good one too.
Yeah. From which you can dip into the wells.
I was going to go with the embroidered hanky, but.
Yeah, that too. The tear-soaked hanky. So, Chariot and Cancer, I think this bears a good amount of looking into, because, again, that sort of like disconnect between the tender maternal thing and the chariot
fierce
itself.
Thing,
and the fierce warrior thing. And
but there's also that idea of the chariot as being a vehicle, and the idea of the body being the vehicle of spirit and the body being the vehicle of new life and birth.
Yes.
As the mother.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's the connection also with Bina, with the mother, the great sea or the great ocean that from which everything springs.
Right. So, I mean, that does bring in the path is from Bina, the mother, the ocean, and Gevura, Mars.
Right.
So there's the fierce martialness of the chariot.
Yeah. Crowley says about the chariot that the charioteer's face is helmeted because none may look upon his face and live. So there's that, like, many layers of enclosure and protection, which we associate with the crab. But also that he's throned rather than conducting the chariot. His only function is to bear the grail. And that's something that also comes to me with the idea of the maternal body in pregnancy, you know, the idea that it's a passive vehicle that's at the same time cardinal. It's gestating, it's creating, but you don't actually have to do anything, you know, in order for that to happen. You're there, and it's an inward attention.
Yeah, that is a good point too about Cancers being cardinal, because, you know, you when you think of the soft squishy crab, but then, you know, hard on the outside, squishy on the inside, and you think of it them as being kind of sensitive and emotional, you forget that they're cardinal. They're actually quite tactical.
Exactly. Something is definitely starting, and it's important for it to start, and that's worth defending. It also, you know, that idea of being throned rather than conducting is something we see in both chariot versions, in both Rider-Waite-Smith and in Thoth. There's an immobility about the warrior figure, you know, in the Rider-Waite version, literally encased in stone. And Thoth version, they're just sitting there with their legs crossed, you know. I'm just sitting here doing my thing and growing at the same time.
Yeah, it's an interesting juxtaposition between the passiveness of the sign, but the activeness of the cardinality aspect of the sign.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, the modern day equivalent of the chariot, the car, is like that, because you're going really fast, but you're just sitting there.
Right.
That paradox seems more appropriate in modern times than in any previous vehicle, in a way. The archetype of the crab, I kind of think of it as there's the tenacity, the claws that have and hold, which I think of as, you know, being kind of related to the Two of Cups. And then the sideways dance with the sea, the kind of like back and forth, the sort of like
back and forth, looking at what it wants until it looks like it's going to get away. And then I better grab it with that pincher.
Yeah. I think of that as being very much like the dance of the Three of Cups, the sort of like communication back and forth with the surrounding environment, exchange of nutrients. And then the four we always talk about is being the Four of Cups, the final decan of Cancer, being kind of the high tide, the crab's relationship with the high tide of the,
doubly lunar.
Yeah. The generative aspects of it somehow, something like that. The thing about the weight version of the Chariot is that weight really thought of it as quite external, you know, triumph of the mind, and said that it would have, I forget what he said, something about if he encountered the high priestess, he would have no access to her secrets. But to me, that's one thing I don't really accept from that interpretation, because I believe the charioteer to have real access to the spiritual secrets of the moon, you know, the carrying of the grail. And his armor is to defend those secrets, and to, I often associate the Chariot with the Merkaba mysticism, the journey inward to encounter the divine. Mm-hmm. So there's something about outer and inner that's just complex about this armor.
Definitely.
In fact, speaking of outer and inner, maybe we can talk a little bit about the Hebrew letter associated with the Chariot or Cancer, which is Het.
Yes, Het.
The fence or enclosure, which again, you know, really speaks to the armor of the crab, the shell, the candy shell, protecting the soft chocolate center. We go from Binah to Gevura, that archetype of the mother, to the archetype of the warrior and the relationship that they have, given that necessity for defense. Really, the Gevura archetype is the soldier, is the warrior aspect of
the warrior in his chariot is exactly the magical image.
But what he's protecting relates back to Binah, the, you know, the mother's precious blood, basically.
The grail, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the conveyance of that precious treasure across the perils of knowledge, the perils of Da'at, of the abyss, going from understanding to severity.
So on the pillar of severity.
On the pillar of severity. And then the next sort of segment of that pillar will be the Hanged Man. So, you know, there's definitely a transmission of the secrets thing going on. So we've got the Hanged Man and the Priestess energies all kind of in parallel. You know, you've got the Priestess in the central vertical pillar. You've got the Hanged Man in the vertical column below. And then you've got the Chariot right there above it on the pillar of form. So there's something in all of these paths about the waters streaming down from the source down into the mundane world.
It's kind of interesting, too, to think of, you know, the grail as an allegory of the womb, and
the grail is the allegory of the womb, because we also talk about gestation a lot in the 2, 3, and 4 of cups. You know, the idea that the final stage of these cancer cards is being too full and uncomfortable and needing to be born.
Yeah. And the womb is one of the body parts associated with cancer. The other one, the breasts, that which feeds the young.
Oh, right. And also the time of year, the summer solstice, being considered
baby animals
and the beginning of the new year for many traditions. The flooding of the Nile happened in Cancer, I guess,
right. And that's, you know, we're around here anyway, that's when we start seeing, you know, in Gemini, we saw things pairing off, and now in Cancer, you start seeing baby birds in the nest with the mother bringing them little tidbits of food.
That's right. Constantly back and forth with the food.
Yes.
When I think about the Hanged Man and the story of water generally, you know, I think about the fact that it always begins with a quest. You know, when you think about the Odin myth, which you portray so beautifully in the Hanged Man in Tabula Mundi, you know, that's about wanting something and looking for something, you know, and the desire for that kind of secret knowledge. And so, you know, that's a part, whereas sacrifice is always a part of the Hanged Man, but we often forget that it begins with the desire for something, because you can't sacrifice until, you know, you want something to sacrifice for. And the Chariot provides that impulse, that.
Yeah, there's definitely a questing aspect to the chariot, as well as a sacrificial aspect to, if you think of it as a maternal and gestation, there's a sacrifice there.
For sure. You
know, and the child is living off the body of the mother.
Right. And that's another thing about the charioteer. One thing I always observe, I forget where I picked it up from, but the charioteer is not doing this for his own glory, right? Mm. You know, it's not like the emperor, who is the boss and the ruler. The charioteer is doing it on behalf of somebody else.
Holy warrior.
Yeah. Yeah. He's on a mission, and it's not really about himself. It's a fairly
mission
selfless.
From God.
Archetype.
Like the Blues Brothers.
And then in terms of the relationship to the high priestess, you know, one thing that I always get from the priestess card is that, you know, the being the veil between the conscious and the unconscious, you know, the between the two realms, and the chariot in a sense is that motion between them. You know, it parallels her path over the abyss.
Yeah, it's the enclosure, but it's also the passage in and out of the enclosure.
Right.
The piercing of the veil.
The piercing of the veil. The going from what can't be known to what can be known. You know, so in a sense, it's going from sleep or dream to waking, or from being enclosed in the womb to birth. It's the same sort of cognate transitions between realms. We talk about the decanic minors, which we've started to a little bit. They're definitely sweeter than the than the ones we talked about in Gemini.
Yeah,
a lot nurturing.
Easier. Yeah, they're definitely a lot easier in all ways. But the planetary Deccan rulers are easier to take too, for the most part.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, Venus, Mercury, Moon. That's a nice sequence there.
All the inner planets, you know?
Yeah, that's true. The images of the Decans. So we've got in the Two of Cups, it's a young virgin with fine clothes with a crown on her head. That's one version. That's the Agrippa version. The Picatrix one is a man whose fingers and head are distorted and slanted, and his body is similar to a horse's body. His feet are white. He has fig leaves on his body. Kind of hard to know what to make of that one.
Yeah, that's something.
Somebody was imbibing something. But the fig leaves on his body, well, I can guess where they were.
Right.
With the virgin crown and the fig leaves and the leaves in general kind of make me think of the generative aspects of Cancer. One thing that's kind of curious is that the significations are acuteness of senses, subtlety of wit, knowledge, love, the love of men, whereas the Three of Cups is the love of women, interestingly enough. The three has the woman with the beautiful face, again, the crown of green myrtle, stem of the water lily, very Cancerian or water-based plant, singing songs of love and joy. The Agrippa one has people in a comely apparel, sitting at a table and playing. Riches, mirth, gladness, love of women. And so those first two Decans are really very pleasant, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's a feeling of interest,
love
excitement.
Love and joy and games and wealth. And,
yeah, just enjoying yourself and feeling safe. And, you know, I think of this as like, you know, all the things you can do in the walled garden of Cancer.
Yeah, that's the safety of the enclosure or the container. I think, you know, I remember when I used to work at a Buddhist retreat center, they called it one of the names of the place was a refuge, and they called it the container, the safety of the container, where you could practice and explore.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, the whole archetype of the vessel is key to this whole discussion, really. You know, the container, and what does it hold? The water, you know, that takes its form.
And the cup.
The final Deccan is where things start to turn a little bit. This is our famous Selhaif.
Right, where the cup overflows. Oh, yeah, the turtle.
The turtle. The Salihafa in Arabic means turtle, with a snake in his hand, who has golden chains. And then the other image of it from Agrippa is a man with a lance and horn bringing out the dogs to hunt, which is quite lunar and quite quest-oriented, kind of like we've talked about that. The significations do have to do with acquiring things, the hunting, but also possessing, which is a theme we've talked about.
Yeah, and then there's mentions of conflict and brawlings and arms in both significations, and it kind of almost, maybe it foreshadows the five.
Yeah, maybe it does, but also the idea that you fight for what you want to hold on to.
Yeah, you know? Yep.
And whereas there's a lot of
possessing
places,
of things, that's very Cancerian.
It is, and it's fighting to possess too, which, you know, fighting isn't always about the thing you want to have. It's often about fighting and just argument and differences of opinion. But here it's really about there's something you want to get hold of. It's a, you know, game of cosmic capture the flag here. There is a working, Agrippa has a working you can do in Cancer 1 in order to increase the fruits of the earth. Something we've been talking about, fertility. It's also good against poisons.
For sure.
Yeah. The image is a woman cornuted. So that means horned, having horns, horns of the moon, right? Tauro Kuros, bullheaded or bullhorned moon, riding on a bull or seven-headed dragon or a crab, arms twined with serpents, again with a dart in the right hand. We talked about how that's a thing. Left hand has a looking glass, so that's the mirror of the moon.
Venus, yeah.
Yes.
Or the moon, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that card is the ruled by Venus.
Yes.
Second ruled by Venus.
Well, actually, and the other working, which I didn't mention in the Taurus episode for Agrippa, is that you can do one where the moon is in Taurus, speaking of Venus, that is good for preventing weariness for travelers, because traveling is a moon thing too, the safe passage. But the whole fertility, increasing the food of the earth, and also it's good against infirmities of children, which is very much a Cancer thing. It reminds me of something in the Orphic hymn, which a word, I don't know how they do it in the Taylor translation, but the word telesphore, you know, giving of grace and bringing to perfection. Telesphore is like bringing forth a perfect progeny, right? You know, something that's fully formed and ready to be born. You know, it's not just about being fertile and giving birth, but about giving birth to something that's had enough time to do
perfected,
it.
Perfected, yeah.
Yeah, which to me is that four
fully baked thing.
Fully baked, yes. That makes me think also of the journey of the Grail that has to be, you know, brought intact, not spilling one drop of the precious blood from Bina to Givora. We were talking about those 2, 3, and 4 of cups, and I don't know, there's just something about that we talked about in the episodes having to do with the three trimesters of pregnancy, but also about,
right, when the definite progression, you know, the conception, the gestation, and then this place is too small.
Yeah, that two of cups is kind of like egg meets sperm, boy meets girl. Three of cups we can think of literally as the quickening, you know,
right? And it's comfy in here.
Yeah, and then the four, let me out.
Yes.
Yeah. I've had enough. I'm ready to come out. The lords of love, abundance, and
luxury. Or blended pleasure.
Blended pleasure. Yeah, luxury being a term that really connotes having enough and more than enough. You know?
You're right, affluence.
Yeah. Superabundance of resources. So the court cards associated with Cancer are the Queen of Cups for the first and second decans, the Remedy for Ruin, the Ten of Swords in her shadow decan, right? The Queen of Cups at her best is maternal, nurturing, empathic, psychic, that sort of like the waters of life connecting
that's
everything.
Like, I think you called the card once the little priestess, and you can definitely see the lunar
Well, she definitely looks like the Thoth priestess. I think of the Two of Swords as being the little priestess in the Rider-Waite-Smith. But if you look at the Queen of Cups,
she looks like a priestess.
She looks,
you know,
like the Thoth priestess, you know, strong.
Scrying into the water.
Yeah, for sure. Looking beyond the veil.
With the moonlight reflecting, yeah.
Yeah, and also in the Rider-Waite-Smith, she's looking at a closed cup, closed like the crab shell. You know, because she can see into it and see past it. She's using it as a focal point, but she doesn't need to actually see anything to understand what's going on.
Yeah, and that's something we didn't mention, is that there's a lot of psychic power in the sign of
Cancer. For sure, for sure. I mean, heavily psychic. Also, you know, you can sort of see that metaphorically in the sort of blending of her gown or her robe with the waters of the sea and the Rider-Waite-Smith card, which is something that also happens in the priestess, high priestess of Rider-Waite-Smith. Those two cards have incredibly strong reflections of one another in both decks. Yeah. Yeah. And then the Four of Cups belongs to the Prince of Wands or Knight of Wands, whose other decans are the ones we'll deal with next in Leo, Five of Wands and Six of Wands. But the Four of Cups thing does, I think, contribute to his impatience, you know, in a way, the desire to get on with things and not wanting to be hidden away and confined in Cancer.
Right.
You know, but to show everything and to reveal everything, that relationship of, you know, the Four of Cups.
Bursting out of the womb.
Yeah. The relationship of the Four of Cups to the full moon implies the relationship of moon and sun, their opposition, the shining of that light being reflected in the moon and then moving straight into Leo, into the sun's territory. So.
Yeah, he's got a pretty powerful position there.
Yes, he certainly does. Negotiating between the two luminaries like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah. Cool. Let's talk about myths. Myths is good.
Okay. So
it's the crab myth, right?
The constellation, yeah, is the crab constellation, or it was in Egyptian times, it was not a crab, it was a scarab. At other times, it was a tortoise. Mm-hmm. We mentioned that in that constellation. So as a crab, it relates to the second labor of Hercules, which was to slay the Hydra. So Hera, you know, sent Hercules on these quests. Hera being a great mother figure, which kind of fits into the Cancerian archetype. You know, she was kind of the nemesis of Hercules and sent him on these labors. And the second one was to slay the Hydra. And during the battle, I guess the crab bit him in the toe.
That's right.
And Hercules then stomped on the crab and killed it. And Hera rewarded the crab for trying, basically, and put him up in the sky.
That's
her.
Right. Yeah. The loyalty of the crab for helping her out. I've heard that maybe the crab had a relationship with the Hydra in some way where it saw the Hydra as a maternal figure. I don't know. Who
they
knows why crabs
each
do
other
what they
in
do.
The, in the sky. I mean, the yeah. Hydra constellation is near the crab constellation. Also in the that sector of the sky is the Beehive Cluster, M44, which is kind of a very lunar thing in the sense that bees are all female.
Yeah, sometimes it's called Chrysippe.
Almost all bees
right?
are female. The worker bees are all female.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's called the manger or the crib.
Right, which
as
is
well.
Another, yeah, that's another myth about the donkeys that were ridden. I think they called them the Asceli or Asceli. Right. I don't know how to pronounce it exactly. Ridden by Bacchus and Vulcan in the war against the Titans. And supposedly the braying of the donkeys scared off the Titans or something. And so as a reward, they were put in the constellation with the manger near them so they would never be hungry. Which seems like a very Cancerian thing, too, to make sure they never lack food.
For sure. I like that a lot. Yeah, it's definitely always the prize of the gods for loyalty is get your ass up in the sky.
Yeah, right.
It's also quite an obscure constellation. It's hard to see, you know? It's a bit elusive.
Right.
Which seems...
Like the crab.
Like the crab. And it also rises backward, I saw somebody say. I don't really know exactly what that means. Huh. But
that's interesting.
Seems like a reference to the sideways or, you know,
sideways
motion
of the crab. Yeah. Makes
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, when we were talking about the chariot, that's something to think about, too, the sideways as opposed to forward motion. It's definitely, most versions of the chariot are not going forward fast.
Right.
I looked in the Penguin Dictionary of Symbols, which is great. We love that, of course, at crab, and there's all kinds of myths that have to do with kind of rainmaking and bringing an end to drought. There's a Chinese corpse goddess.
Yeah, I saw something. Yeah. that the Chinese called the constellation, I wasn't sure if I should mention it because it's kind of grim, but they called it the exhalation of a pile of corpses.
Oh, yeah, that was quite a malefic reading of that. But the goddess I read about was named Niu Chou or Niu Zhou or something like that. I couldn't quite figure out the etymology. My Chinese etymology skills are non-existent. But this is a goddess who was praying for rain and interceding on behalf of the people, I guess. And the sun god burned her up to a withered and desiccated corpse, apparently, although eventually they did get their rain. And she was associated with the crab, with giant crabs. They were said to live in her land. So the crabs are like a symbol of rain's returning, I think, as well, you know, as well as the food that you see as a littoral or shore creature. They're the first to come back, and a symbol of abundance and fertility. You know, when I look at the sequence of the 2, 3, and 4 of cups, I sometimes think of, inevitably because of the 4 of cups, I think of the story of Gautama Buddha.
Oh, yeah, I always you know? Do, too. Yep.
Yeah, because they're sort of like these themes of desire in the 2 of cups, and desire is the root of all suffering, and the enlightenment of that, the realization of that in the 4 of cups being the the key to superseding it. There's definitely something about that myth in that sequence as well. Okay, so I guess in terms of correspondences, maybe it's worth mentioning the association of the moon both with the geomantic figure of Populus and the geomantic figure of Via, which are, you know, two kind of, I don't know, mother and daughter. They're the one that has all the dots and the one that has half of them.
Via is definitely a straight path. The way, Via the way, and then Populus the people in the way. Populus especially fits because of its association with the people, and the moon is kind of the, you know, that's the signification of popular opinion. Like,
the
if you
news,
have a prominent
moon,
you'll be either popular or unpopular.
Yeah, moon definitely
and
confers
really being in
publicity.
Touch with what the people want or need.
Mm-hmm. The assembly of people, the and you know, it's called favorable with favorable things, unfavorable with unfavorable things. And to me, that's what popular opinion is. Right?
Yeah.
It's just what everybody thinks. It's the opinion of the masses, which can be negative or positive. And
it's also like a mirror. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And an energy which can work for good or evil as well, the popular opinion. The word populous, and I think public, are probably cognate. You know,
popular opinion. Yes.
Yeah. Public publicity. The idea that, you know,
the collective unconscious.
Although the moon has no light of its own, when it reflects the sunlight, it illuminates, it confers glamour, it confers light, it confers whatever you want it to confer. It's more flexible and fluid, the image that's raised by the light of the moon, than that raised by the sun. And Via, well, that is said to be positive for journeyings, for travelers, Via.
Well, that's interesting
road.
That because Jupiter's exalted here in Cancer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Ruler of Sagittarius, where voyaging is privileged. But negative for everything else. So, you know, and to me,
fine
that's
if you
like,
want to get a move on.
yeah, that's changeableness for you, right? Because it's good if you want to change places, but bad if you don't want to move.
That's definitely the moon's changeability and the whole, you know, birthing, coming out of the moon. You can't stay there.
You don't get to stay there. It's good if you want to move on. It's interesting. That's something about the waxing and the waning of the moon. I don't know. There's something when you do moon magic that has to do with being in tune with the ebb and flow of things and being able to adapt easily. More correspondences. We talked a lot about the crab, but also dogs of the moon, horses, rabbits, turtles, the sphinx.
Yep.
Let's see.
Vampires.
Oh, good point. Good point. Yeah. Is that in the imaginary animals and creatures of 777? That makes sense. Trees and plants are, of course, watery ones like the lotus.
Any white flowers?
Yes.
Lilies and water lilies, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Cabbages and turnips, big, round, and watery.
Yeah, yeah. Any plants that live in the water, any animals that live in the water, snakes and fish and...
I like the stone as being the pearl and also amber.
Yes, that's interesting because ambergris, of course, is from the whale that...
Whale vomit?
Sea, and amber, it's yes, and amber itself is a resin, a fluid that's wept from the tree. And in fact, you know, labdanum is the scent associated with cancer, or onica, who knows what that is. Some people think, you know, that it was the snail.
Is
the
labdanum
crustacean.
The stuff that they used to comb out of the beards of goats?
Yes, rock rose.
And so
labdanum.
That's interesting because the cancer
Ooh,
Capricorn
yeah.
axis.
Yeah, that is. That's neat. And it is, you know, one of those resinous sweet perfumes. Although actually in terms of taste, the taste of cancer is supposed to be salty like the sea, which kind of makes sense.
For sure. Oysters.
Yes. Camphor also. And camphor and eucalyptus are lunar.
And milk.
Yes, for sure. I often think of ice cream as being a particular Cancerian thing. Ice cream yeah. in a little vintage silver dish.
Yes. Definitely the vintage silver dish.
Right. Stones, besides amber, there's
the drug
sapphire.
Ergo.
Oh, ergo. Yeah, the hallucinogen.
Yeah.
Chalcedony. I think of white stones as being very, very lunar. Generally, selenite
moonstones,
and moonstone, of course. Yeah. Those for sure. Stones that are watery. You said pearls, I think.
Yeah.
And also in places besides the watery places, lakes and swamps and seas, but also confluences of water, deltas, fertile deltas.
Yeah. There's definitely, I think, almost every cancer person I've ever known loves the ocean.
Yes. Loves being near it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But who doesn't love the ocean?
But who doesn't love the ocean, indeed?
Oh, we didn't do the magical weapons and powers.
Oh,
so,
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The magical weapon is the furnace.
Right.
And
which
the,
is kind of like
magical
the
power is the power of casting enchantments.
Yeah. So you have both the sort of like magic mirror of the moon thing going on there and the powers of illusion and glamour that the moon confers.
Mm-hmm.
But also the furnace has sort of grail-like.
Yeah, and it's definitely an enclosed space where something is baked, you know?
Yes, yet the enclosure, the fence. Yes, right.
Yep.
But both the tripod and the furnace, we're talking about ritual objects, right? I mean,
yes.
Everything in the magical weapons is a ritual object of some sort. All right, let's give a summary as best we can. Have you kind of hit all your notes? I think I've gotten most of my scrawled, illegible notes here. Did we do the colors? No, we didn't do the colors.
Oh, we didn't. So the colors are all the colors of a live, not a cooked, crab.
Yeah.
So those would be the amber, which we've already mentioned as the stone, the amber color, the maroon, the rich, bright russet, and dark greenish brown. So you see all those colors in a live crab if you're ever at the beach and you see one scurrying around. That's what color they are before they get cooked and turned bright marshal red.
Right. Yeah. And they also, they're really colors that are so, I don't know. I really think of them as having to do with like turbid, life-giving waters and rich earth, you know? There's something very fertile about those colors too.
Yeah, definitely. They're all kind of colors that they're not pure, clear colors. Like the yellow is amber. It's it's like they were all mixed with brown.
Yeah.
Like
fertile
murky. Brown, because the amber would be yellow mixed with brown, and the maroon would be red mixed with brown, and the, you know, et cetera,
the green mixed with brown. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because it's from mixing things that things grow.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. Themes. We've talked about the nurturing and fertile aspects of cancer, the crab.
Yeah, the connection with history and love of mementos and home. Safe spaces, refuges.
Yes. And the powers of the mind in terms of memory, but also psychic powers and empathy and moodiness.
Feelings, yeah.
yes,
all feelings and changing emotions. And there's a very parental thing about the whole Capricorn Cancer axis in general.
For sure, that sort of the moon on the one end and the Saturn on the other, the sort of quickness and the slowness of those two poles.
Cancer's connection to the family and the tribe and the people, populace, the people.
Mm-hmm. And via the journey, the going from place to place, waxing and waning, the most precious things and how you guard and protect them, the tenacity.
And there's also a real theme. You know, we talked so much about metaphors of birth and gestation, but it's also important, I think, that early childhood is so associated with Cancer. And
right.
A Cancer is usually formed, you know, a lot of a Cancer person's attitudes on life are formed in early childhood. It's a really formative time, especially for sensitive individuals.
Safety and comfort are key in that period of life, as in all periods of life, but, you know, but especially then when it's a formative and sensitive time. The association with water and moon making and lakes and seasons. The wet places of the world.
And then there's the idea of growth and not just, you know, fertility type growth, but also saving and accumulating both possessions and finances, making them grow.
And also having snacks and growing from your snacks.
Wanting to feed others and wanting to both feed and baby others, and also probably you need and want to be fed and babied yourself.
Yeah.
Wanting to be loved, fear of not being loved.
The nurture and the desire for nurture, the breasts and the stomach being fed and taken care of. It's a very round sign.
Yeah,
in every way. All right. I think we've done our job here. So,
yeah.
Thank you for traveling with us through the waxing and waning of the moon and its cycles. We will be back next time with the other luminary, the sun, and we will attempt to shine a light on it. All right. See you then. And that's our episode for this week. If you love Fortune's Wheelhouse, and really, who doesn't, you may want to pick up the book version of the podcast. It's called Tarot Deciphered, Decoding Esoteric Symbolism in Modern Tarot, and it's available both online and in bookstores. In Tarot Deciphered, you can find just about everything we talk about in the podcast. Well, almost everything. There aren't quite so many dick jokes. And it's over 600 pages, so when you're not reading it, you can use it as a doorstop, or a paperweight, or a flower press. Whatever floats your boat. If you'd like to connect with over 1,000 smart, nice, and most importantly, like-minded friends on social media, you can visit the Fortune's Wheelhouse Academy group on Facebook, which is open to all. Many of us, including myself, are there every day posting our daily draws and spells to go with them, and it's a great place to see esoteric tarot in action. Fortune's Wheelhouse has a Redbubble shop where you can load up on Fortune's Wheelhouse merch, including coffee mugs, t-shirts, and notebooks printed with all the astrological correspondences of the minor arcana, because we are nerds. That is at redbubble.com/people/wheelhouse93/shop. Mel's main store, where you can read her articles and subscribe to her newsletter, is at tarotcart.com. Her auction site, which has periodic offerings of out-of-print items, one-of-a-kind items, art prints, and original art, is at tarotcart.auction. And her website for new work and updates on her projects is, as always, tabulamundi.com. You can find me at tsusanchang.com, where you can find links to my classes, sign up for a reading or mentorship session, and learn about my upcoming events. And if you're interested in my custom arcana cases and silken brocade for your decks, and my customized astrological perfumes, you can find those at etsy.com/shop/tarotista. You can also get talismanic Eight of Wands keychains and luggage tags there, because everybody needs those. So come, visit us online and pick up something wonderful for a tarot-loving friend or just for yourself, because you are a hero of the astral plane and we so appreciate your support. And that's our episode for this week. If you love Fortune's Wheelhouse, and really, who doesn't, you may want to pick up the book version of the podcast. It's called Tarot Deciphered, Decoding Esoteric Symbolism in Modern Tarot, and it's available both online and in bookstores. In Tarot Deciphered, you can find just about everything we talk about in the podcast. Well, almost everything. There aren't quite so many dick jokes. And it's over 600 pages, so when you're not reading it, you can use it as a doorstop, or a paperweight, or a flower press. Whatever floats your boat. If you'd like to connect with over 1,000 smart, nice, and most importantly, like-minded friends on social media, you can visit the Fortune's Wheelhouse Academy group on Facebook, which is open to all. Many of us, including myself, are there every day posting our daily draws and spells to go with them, and it's a great place to see esoteric tarot in action. Fortune's Wheelhouse has a Redbubble shop where you can load up on Fortune's Wheelhouse merch, including coffee mugs, t-shirts, and notebooks printed with all the astrological correspondences of the minor arcana, because we are nerds. That is at redbubble.com/people/wheelhouse93/shop. Mel's main store, where you can read her articles and subscribe to her newsletter, is at tarotcart.com. Her auction site, which has periodic offerings of out-of-print items, one-of-a-kind items, art prints, and original art, is at tarotcart.auction. And her website for new work and updates on her projects is, as always, tabulamundi.com. You can find me at tsusanchang.com, where you can find links to my classes, sign up for a reading or mentorship session, and learn about my upcoming events. And if you're interested in my custom arcana cases and silken brocade for your decks, and my customized astrological perfumes, you can find those at etsy.com/shop/tarotista. You can also get talismanic 8 of Wands keychains and luggage tags there, because everybody needs those. So come, visit us online and pick up something wonderful for a tarot-loving friend or just for yourself, because you are a hero of the astral plane and we so appreciate your support.